B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes. Twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper.
Hey, Murray.
Gasper! Gasper! Be a loose final hour here. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. If you want to join us, get a couple on the open line, 617-779-0985. Whatever you like to discuss. Doesn't even have to be sports related. I feel like I'm a five-tool radio guy, so whatever you'd like to discuss. But with that, Chris, is there a bee in your proverbial bonnet? Anything else that you didn't get out through the week or yesterday in your appearance on Filger and Mazz that's bugging that you want to discuss?
Yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit about this in terms of Cam Newton and Stidham. But do you remember when there was the Mike Reese story a little while back saying the Patriots are feeling like this was like June the 11th or 12th? Did the Patriots feel like their offense will be better this year?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Which is a crock.
So was that better this year? Is that saying, now looking back, now that we know Cam Newton's here, one, do you think they really believe that? Or was that just propaganda, Patriots propaganda? Two, do you think that if they do believe it, it's based on they just feel like they only need nominal quarterback play, that basically the rest of the offense around the quarterback is going to carry it? Or do you think that they sort of knew like they were going to upgrade the position?
Overall, I think that it was just propaganda and a F you to Tom Brady of sorts, because I do think that there is a level of gamesmanship that's still going on between he and Bill. I really do believe that there is a, you know, Mazz refers to it as an arms race.
Okay.
I referred to it as a hog measuring contest. One and the same, really. I do think that there is an eye on each other. And I think that played into the Patriots and Bill signing Cam Newton. So, but at that time, you know, going back a month and a half ago, that was probably just propaganda.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you could make a case, because you did say earlier in the show, you said it yesterday too, and I think it's very noteworthy that there has been conversations going on between Bill Belichick and Cam Newton this whole offseason.
Yes, that's what I was told.
So maybe that's what they meant. But I don't think it had anything to do with Jared Stidham. Like, that is now, again, now that Cam Newton's here, he's the guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I just think it's really interesting. Like, they spent so much time this offseason. I mean, they pumped Jarrett Stidham's tires in a way that Roberto Luongo could only dream of having his tires pumped. It's just amazing. Like, our offense is going to be better than it was last year, and this was with Stidham. Stidham organizing, allegedly, these workouts, and not Brian Hoyer, the veteran guy. The guy who, again, to go back to Tom Brady's absences from OTAs the last couple of years, who was the guy running the show at OTAs when Brady was not there?
Refresh me.
Brian Hoyer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So Brian Hoyer, who is running the show at OTAs when Brady wasn't there, he wouldn't be the one organizing these workouts.
Oh, right, I see.
All of a sudden, it was Jared Stidham organizing them, and Brian Hoyer was just along for the ride. I mean, they really laid it on thick with Stidham. And that doesn't mean the guys can't play, and they do legitimately like him. They do, but they're really hedging their bets. I mean, they've set it up with all their media moles, you know, Adam Schefter and the like, where no matter how this thing plays out,
Bill wins.
Cam Newton's here. It's like great signing. And by the way, I love the signing, but it works out with Cam. He's the quarterback equivalent of Revis. It's like Bill's a genius. He got this guy on the cheap. This was a genius move. Stidham somehow beats out Cam, and it turns out he can play. Well, that was plan A all along. They always knew, like, Stidham was the guy. Stidham was the guy they liked. We told you all along he was really good. Neither of those guys plays. Brian Hoyer ends up the quarterback. They go, like, 6-10. It's like, well, they didn't make any real commitment to Newton or Stidham. They didn't spend any real money. They knew all along they'd have to find another quarterback. And now they're in a position to do so in the draft. They don't have money tied up in the position. You know, they didn't commit to Stidham. They didn't commit to Newton. Bill Belichick knew he needed to maintain flexibility all along. This was the plan all along. No matter how this thing shakes out, it's going to be Bill Belichick right again.
That's why I refer to him often as Bill Jong-un. It's like, you know, the leader of North Korea. Everything that he does is the right thing. He goes out, plays 18 holes. He finishes with an 18. Everything he does is perfect. Man, it must be a hell of a life.
Yep.
Tony in the truck on Cam Newton. You're next here on Gasper and Murray. Hello, Tony.
Hey, how you doing, boys? Listen, I love your program. Listen, week in and week out. Gasper, I love you. Murray, you are the voice of reason, brother. Keep it up.
Hey, thanks.
Two quick points. One, I think that I agree with Gasper 100% that with the Patriots offense, I guess we don't really need Cam Newton to be throwing bombs down the field. It's not really their style of play anyhow. And how do you feel about Cam's legs? Do you think that's going to elevate our running game?
Well, I think so. You know, so one thing I do really believe about him being here is if it's going to work, Chris, the offensive line has to be better than it was last year. They're going to be close to what they were in 2018, and I think that they can be if they're healthy. So it's like, you know, you put the caveat on Cam Newton, this will work if he's healthy. Well, it'll also work if the offensive line is healthy. And, yeah, I think, you know, Joe Murray was with us this week, and he feels like that's what it's really going to be more than anything else. It's going to be more ground and pound. Cam Newton's going to be part of that. And that's what this offense is going to be. But again, you know, David Andrews has to be back. That right side's going to be better. You need better out of Cannon and Shaq Mason and the like. So, yeah, I could see that it would be, you know, maybe 60-40 running to passing.
Yeah, I could see that too. It takes the pressure off whoever the quarterback is. Again, I think it's Cam Newton. And if your quarterback can be part of the running game, I mean, that's an element the Patriots really haven't had. And you know what I remember? I remember last year, I'm trying to remember who it was against, but remember they played Houston, they lost that game, and the Texans ran that option play with Hopkins and Watson.
Yeah.
And then the Patriots tried to run like a version of it with like Brady and James White, and I don't know, I'm trying to remember who that was against. I want to say it was either against Buffalo or Miami at the end of the year. Well, now that play that they tried to run, that will work with Cam Newton. And so there's kind of stuff like that that you can do and pick up yardage that will help. And the strength of the team should be the offensive line. I mean, Joe Tooney's still here. They have until the 15th to do a long-term deal. Otherwise, he's on the franchise tag. You have, hopefully, a healthy Shaq Mason, and hopefully David Andrews can come back. So that would be the strength of your team, that interior offensive line. You should be able to run the ball the way you did in the 2018 playoffs, you know, when Gale Sayers dominated.
John in the truck with another Patriots thought. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Murray. Wanted to touch base with you because I know that you're diehard Brady honk, and I think I'm sick and tired of people labeling one person a honk one way or the other. But I think I would classify myself on the Belichick side, especially over the last 4 to 5 years. And I wonder, is it possible to be a fan of everyone and look at it as a perspective? It doesn't have to be Brady or Belichick, but maybe it is both. And when the question is brought up, you know, can they have a better offense this season? I go back to Brady stating last year when he was 8-0, it says, I'm the most miserable 8-0 quarterback of all time. Mm-hmm. And I look at mindset. Was he really incorporating everyone into the offense? Was he really checked in? If he knew that before going into the season, he was already out the door.
Yeah.
Take him out. And I know this is crazy to say about a sick, like the GOAT. I understand because I'm a Brady fan. But if you're out the door, guys, you know this as well as I do. And Murray, I think you said this recently. You know, you put onions or whatever the heck you did in the ceiling of the last place you worked at. Sure. If you're out the door, right? Guys, please let me fit. Like, if you're out the door, you're mentally checked. So I don't think it's naive to say subtracting the greatest of all time and putting in a guy like Cam Newton, which we do forget. Yes, he's riddled with injuries.
Yeah.
But at one point, he was an MVP. I'm going to let you guys think about this, but I think too much is being said about Brady, Belichick being like, you know, this evil genius. But maybe he's on to something here with Cam Newton.
Can I just ask you a question, though? Like, the comment about the offense. So I sort of agree with you now with Cam Newton. But just for context, the comment about the offense being better was made when Cam Newton wasn't here and it was just Stidham. Does that change how you feel about it at all? Because you just referenced Cam Newton. I think that's a lot more plausible than when that comment was actually made with the assumption that Stidham was the quarterback. That's just my opinion on it.
You know what, Chris? I think it's a very fair point because I think, you know, we live in a town of extremes. And when we were, you know, guys, from the 2 to 6 show, it's all about extremes. So when we sit there and take Brady out of the equation, and then you have the Bobos that are sitting there saying, oh, well, Stidham's just going to be able to come in and he's going to be a top 10 quarterback. Did I think that was the case? No. But did I also think, like, can we get a little bit more out of guys like N'Keal Harry, mean, who knows? The jury's out on him. But I still look back at Brady's targets, and Gasper, you know better than anyone on this one. He does spread the ball around, but you know as well as I do, if you're not in the circle of trust,
yep,
you're gone. And I think if you put Stidham in there, if you put any other quarterback, anyone, except for Hoyer, I'm right there with you with Hoyer, Mark. But if you put anyone else in there, if you put anyone else in there who has some kind of mindset as far as spreading the ball around, it could be an addition. Not saying it's a better offense, but I think it could function a little bit differently. I'll let you guys go.
Thanks John. Yeah, look, and I mean, I'll even be the first to admit, was Tom Brady the epitome of professionalism last year? No. Did he ice guys out? Yes. So, you know,
did he also tell the truth, though, about what was around him?
Yeah, he did. So, again, I think that quote, or that what you're bringing up there, what Mike Reese wrote, you know, back in June, pre-Cam Newton, it's just disingenuous. You're, like, trying to pump the tires of a kid that's had all the but a handful of snaps, one of which was a pick six, and then he got benched again when he was in mop-up duty. So that I found forced. But could it, especially now that Cam Newton is here, look better offensively? Yes, especially in the red zone. You know, so you're going to have Cam Newton again, with the caveat if healthy, being able to, you know, use his legs and, you know, be a de facto running back to pound it in. So you're not relying on Sony Michel to have the handoff and then fall down. Or, you know, he's going to be more comfortable with a guy the size of N'Keal Harry, who he had dealt with in Carolina when Kelvin Benjamin was actually trying and not eating himself out of the league.
And
so,
Devin Funchess.
Yeah, so I do think, yeah, it's plausible. It could look better post-Tom Brady now that you have Cam Newton. But when it was Stidham, please.
No, I agree with a lot of what you said. I just think, look, I understand, and he is right about, you know, we do tend to go to extremes. I think most people know I'm sort of Team Brady, but I think the mindset thing, in my opinion, is overplayed. The reality is Tom wants to win. He's always wanted to win. He's one of the greatest winners in the history of team sports. Do people really think he was just like, oh, I don't want to win with these guys? It wasn't I don't want to win with these guys. It's I can't win with these guys, and he was proven correct. And when I say these guys, I'm talking about Jacoby Myers and Gunnar Olszewski,
right,
and Philip Dorsett, who honestly, again, Philip Dorsett was sort of like the Jared Stidham of wide receivers. Like the Patriots were always endlessly pumping that guy up to be something more than he was. And I know he caught some passes in the AFC Championship game against Kansas City. I get it. But that guy was never more than a number four wide receiver. And every time they tried to bump him up to a three or a two, it didn't really work out. And even going back to that Chargers playoff game in 2018, where he was really good, he got open on like route combinations. I remember talking to him after the game, and he was like, oh, we saw something on film, and Julian and I knew that we could confuse Desmond King, and that's what happened. So they schemed guys like that open. They just didn't have the horses last year. I'll cite one more stat. They had the lowest percentage of targets at tight end of any team in the league. So think about that. You go from Rob Gronkowski.
Worst group in the league.
Yeah, you go from Rob Gronkowski to now you have the lowest percentage of quarterback targets in the league. And that was, they had to bring Benjamin Watson back.
Right.
You had Ryan Izzo and Matt LaCoste. Like, I think people get caught up, and Felger's the king of this, in this mindset thing. The mindset for Brady probably wasn't as good as it should have been. It wasn't positive. But I think people are ascribing way too much to that and saying that's why the offense didn't work. No, the offense didn't work because they weren't good enough. And for the first time in his career, Brady was fully honest and told you when he was at the podium, these guys aren't good enough. And then everybody's like, Brady has a bad attitude. Brady's a bad guy. Brady's not professional this year. The one year Brady was exactly what somebody like Felger wants him to be, which is brutally honest and not just spouting the party line, then he gets criticized for doing that because he didn't have the right, I'm doing air quotes, mindset to play with scrubs. Give me a break.
617-779-0985. You want to join the show? Got an open line if you want to join us. If you didn't hear yet, day two of practice for the Celtics down in the Orlando bubble, and the news on Kemba Walker's knee, not great. We'll get to that next here on Gasper and Murray.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, a Sports Hub. So, a couple of things to update you on, Celtics and Patriots related. First, with the Celtics, in case you didn't know yet, day two of practice down in the Orlando bubble for the team. And head coach Brad Stevens alluded to it yesterday, or late yesterday, that there was some concern about Kemba Walker's knee, which was aggravating to hear, I think, at least for me and I think most Celtics fans, I think, at this point, because, you know, we've had like 4 months off. The assumption was, health, not a problem. Kemba Walker's knee, it'll be fine. Well, today, after the second practice, Brad Stevens said that the team wants to strengthen Kemba Walker's knee. He is ramping up so he doesn't have setbacks once they start playing. But Kemba Walker will likely have a minutes restriction when the Celtics start games. Not great. Then we have this with the Patriots, reading from Mike Reese, ESPN Boston, along with Field Yates, reporting significant salary cap news for the Patriots, settlements and compensation grievances with Antonio Brown, that a-hole, $4 million to the team, and Aaron Hernandez, remember him, over $2.5 million to the team that have created space for the club. Patriots' current cap space, $7.79 million. Good for the team. If you're Cam Newton right now and you see that pop up on social media, you have just thrown your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, wait a second. These incentives? Huh? Wait, what? What? I signed for the league minimum, $1.05 million. Only $550,000 of that guaranteed?
I'd be pissed. So explain this to me. I'm a rockhead. So compensation grievances, the Antonio Brown one, I know that was being figured out. The Aaron Hernandez, like, what the hell were they still on the hook with him for?
I don't remember. It's probably like bonus money they could recoup because he violated basically the morals clause. But I honestly don't know. I mean, I do know that they had sort of gone back and were relitigating that, but I think there was bonus money that they paid out to him that they could claim he violated the morals clause in the contract and that he had to give that money back, or his estate had to give that money back, I should say.
So what do they do with this? Is there maybe another move coming? I know that Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, wrote yesterday Patriots would be a good landing spot for David Njoku, the tight end with the Cleveland Browns.
People have said Jadeveon Clowney.
You know, I think I really liked him coming out of college. I bought into that hype of that, you know, that jarring hit when they were playing Michigan. SC was playing South Carolina.
Oh, he crushed that guy. That was awesome.
Crushed that running back. The helmet goes flying off. You thought the head was still inside it. Like, I think he's mostly been kind of meh in his career.
He doesn't always get – he's interesting, though. And Belichick believes in this in terms of you can't judge the impact of a pass rusher by sacks. That a lot of times you can get pressure and you can alter the quarterback, and that's more important than a sack. And I'll tell you, last year at Seattle, Clowney didn't have great sack numbers, but the two games he played against San Francisco, I don't know if you remember watching those games, he dominated those games.
Here's what irks me about him. There's a Rajon Rondo thing to his game. He tries when the lights are on, like, and it's a primetime game. That kind of crap irks me because I've seen it. I saw it against, you know, one of the games, I think I might have been the one here in 17, 18. One of those Houston games, he was a monster.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the opener, if I remember correctly. But he tries when, like, it's a big game, and otherwise he's just kind of there. That bugs me with any sport, with any player.
Well, I'll say this. If he came here on a one-year deal, he would need to show out all year long to get paid. You know how the Patriots like that, and traditionally that works out very well for them. You know, guys who have something to prove, who you're getting on a little bit of a discount, who want to go back into the market and get paid, that traditionally works out well for them. So, you know, I'm just saying, if you could maneuver and get a little, I mean, there are still guys, as Belichick has said often, you know, we all know cap space can be maneuvered in a variety of ways, and I don't have their cap ledger in front of me, but I still look at guys like Marcus Cannon, and there's some other guys on the team where I'm like, can't you redo this deal or just cut this guy? I still think that they could carve out a little bit more cap space.
Let's go to Cam and Taunton, who wants to talk about Kemba Walker's gimpy knee. Go ahead, Cam.
Hey, Jim, first of all, I got your cameo last night. Thank you. That was very nice.
Another satisfied customer. Go ahead, Ken.
What is it with the teams in this town? Why are they so dishonest when it comes to – if there's one team in this town honest when it comes to injuries, and that's the Bruins. They say Pasternak's out 4 to 6 weeks. He's back in a month. But every other team in this town, the Celtics, KG's fine. 2 months later, he's out for the year. Kyrie will be okay, just needs some rest, out for the year. And now Kemba has 4 months off on this gimpy knee, and it's already given him problems after two practices. Eddie Rodriguez falls, playing shag and fly balls in the spring training. He'll be out 2 weeks. He comes back in the middle of June. Why are the teams in the city so dishonest with injuries?
It's a good question. I mean, I get that they want to, you know, protect their assets. That's probably a cold way of putting it, but I don't know. Like, I think it ultimately doesn't do them any kind of service by trying to candy coat it or hide it. you know, the Bruins, he's right, have always pretty much been up front as much as they possibly can be. I mean, you want to protect the player, too.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, we all know in the playoffs, though, it's like, you know, upper, like were they honest with Patrice Bergeron when he played?
Oh, no.
You know, he played with in game six against the Blackhawks with, like, car crash injuries. Were they honest there?
No, not at all.
So is it honesty or is it just that, I know, I don't want to go into this cliche again, this trope, but there is some truth to it about the toughness of hockey players. Is it that they're more honest or that the hockey players just are like, screw it, I'm coming back? Or if, you know, Bergeron's like, screw it, I'm playing through this basically collapsed lung.
Look, it's just no matter what, you know, regardless of, you know, how these teams are in terms of their honesty with the injuries, just in regard to Kemba Walker's knee, like, it's like if you're pumped for them to be back and you think that they have a legitimate chance to come out of the East. And I think some people do, most people do, maybe, because of you assume that they would all be healthy after all this time off. This is frustrating to hear. Like, 4 months off and the knee is still an issue when it was being talked about as not a big deal before the shutdown. So, like, what's really going on here? It does feel like they're playing you a little bit, and this thing is worse than was initially reported. And don't be surprised within the next few weeks, months, whatever, when Kemba Walker goes under their knife, because that feels imminent, right? Like, it feels that's all a matter of time.
So you're saying, like, you're saying he won't even make it to the playoffs or won't make it through the playoffs?
I'm not going to be surprised at this point. The way that this is being talked about, Chris, they've been back for 2 days.
Oh, man.
It's the same crap that was going on before the shutdown.
I think, you know, it's bad either way from this regard. Either that's the worst case scenario, they don't have him at all, and he has to, you know, have surgery. Or he plays, he guts it out, but what you get is the Kemba you got from February 1st on.
Yeah, you read some of those numbers. They're not good.
Yeah, here it is again. 9 games. He shot 32.4% from the field, 31.9% from three. He averaged 16.3 points per game, only 4.4 assists and 2 turnovers per game. And, you know, we all remember that OKC game where he got his pocket picked at the end.
Yeah.
So if that's the guy that they're getting, there would be some issues. You would need Marcus Smart to really step up big time, and that would definitely affect your depth overall. Maybe somebody like Tremont Waters needs to really step up. I don't know. You would be in a little bit of a tough spot, I think. Because, again, I think so many people, Jim, are basing their optimism about the Celtics on this idea of their depth and having the four guys who averaged, you know, 20 points per game or around 20 points per game and being able to do that. And if you don't have that, suddenly the math's a little different for them.
Paul in Somerville on the NBA bubble. Hello, Paul.
Hey, what's up, guys? I know the smart money is always to bet on the teams that have the frontline talent. It's just with the bubble, it seems to me that it wouldn't shock me at all if two completely random teams made it out of their conferences because of life in the bubble was just okay for them. I mean, these guys are going into a situation that they've never, ever experienced. So I think so much of the team's success is going to have to determine who acclimates to life in the bubble. I mean, I'm not a professional athlete, but when I go on vacation to an all-inclusive resort, I'm done by day three. I want to get the hell out of here. So these guys are going for 3 months. It's going to affect them in ways we don't know.
No, it's true. But you know, like, the NBA is such a star-driven league, and without that singular talent, it typically, one of those teams, you know, wouldn't end up winning the championship. You got to go back to, you know, mid-aughts Detroit to see a team like that actually did win. So you'd still have to have the guy. So with that being said, outside of, you know, the L.A. teams or Milwaukee, who do you give a chance to? Because you still, I think, need the star player.
I mean, I guess, you know, I'm a Celtics green teamer, so I'm optimistic if they have their head screwed on, they can come out of it. But honestly, like a team like Miami, who's well-coached and has good chemistry,
yeah.
What if Jimmy Butler just goes full psycho and just carries the team? I mean, it's possible, you know? And, like, you know, what if, like, LeBron James get there and his bed is not comfortable? Like, how do we, like, account for these things, you know?
No, it's true, and you already see some of the outpouring of bitchiness on on social media of what they're having to deal with in terms of the accommodations and deal with, you know, putting air quotes around that. Like, I don't think it's that bad from what I've seen. The food seems problematic. But I don't know. Do you think that could happen? So, like, I still think you need star power. Like,
you
know, so if, like, Houston won, you know, I think that's a surprise to odds makers. But I think in the grand scheme of things, not a surprise, considering the accommodations and the stuff that they're having to put up with that they normally wouldn't have to. But I still think you need a guy. You know, he mentions Miami. Okay, Jimmy Butler, they're well coached. They have some nice role players. That I couldn't see happening. Like, I'm not the biggest Butler guy either. I think you have to be, so your A tier is, you know, the LA teams, Milwaukee,
yep.
And then there's the drop off and throw Houston maybe OKC in there. Like,
what about the Nuggets? That I think that would surprise. I mean,
that'd be a surprise to me.
I love Jokic, but I think to what he's talking about in terms of a team with great chemistry that maybe doesn't have that transcendent star, I would look at a team like Denver, and maybe a team like Denver has a better chance in this bubble. You know, once Jokic, who has had coronavirus, is able to come back and get back into the United States. But once that happens, they have a lot of depth. They have a lot of good pieces. Maybe that's a team. And here's the other thing that could be an X factor. And B-Rob, you can chime in here too. We're excited here in Boston about the progress we feel like maybe a guy like Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown has made during the shutdown. Well, what if Michael Porter Jr. for Denver comes back? He had all this time off. This guy's had injury issues. What if he comes back and he's just a monster?
Yeah, no question about it. That's a great below-the-radar name. One other team, bring up Toronto. I feel like like Siakam, they have so many young guys on that team that can break through too. But the one other thing I think in terms of Kemba that we're ignoring here, like you guys, Chris, you brought up those numbers.
Yeah.
We haven't seen peak Kemba with peak Tatum yet. Because Tatum kind of broke out
right
when Kemba was kind of breaking down. So if they work this right with Kemba and get him right in time for the playoffs, then like I think the ceiling of this team does go up.
It's a good point.
Yeah. Now that caller has me thinking though of times I've gone away for extended stays, and by like day three, you know, you're just over it for some reasons. I think of a place that my wife and I stayed at. Went to Turks and Caicos. Great place.
Oh, cool.
If you can afford it, awesome. Like, you should go see it at least once. But the Airbnb we stayed at, Chris, the bed, it was like it was stuffed with newspaper.
And with your bad back, I can only imagine.
Like, it was just, one of the nights, I had to go out and sleep on the floor because it was more comfortable than the newspaper-stuffed bed. Like, sometimes, like, come on, just spend the extra a few bucks, Airbnb owners or hotels, like, can't put up with that kind of crap.
So I have to say, Jim, so I know Turks and Caicos is not inexpensive, but as you're saying, spend the extra few bucks, what's triggering in my head is, hey, Jim, why didn't you spend the extra few bucks and go to a resort instead of the Airbnb?
Chris, do you know how much money that, you know what the difference, that's not just a few bucks. That is an island for rich people. We went and got drinks at it was like a Gainsport or whatever, and when they realized we didn't have a room number to pay, we got treated like the scum that we are.
Oh, really?
Like, oh, yeah. So it's like $4,000 a night. Like, get out of here. Like, who has that kind of money except for, like, rich people? So, yeah, I mean, you can still go.
Is it really $4,000 a night?
Dude, it's crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. I mean, when I was looking at it, I was like, man, these flights are actually affordable. But these room prices don't make a lick of sense. But turns out everything you look at, wildly expensive. If it's just to do like a sunset cruise where they throw you a cheese sandwich and a beer, it was $1,000 a head. That money, that island is for rich people, like wealthy, like Rothschild type money.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You need to be like actress rich to go there. And you see like the people you see getting off the plane, you're like, oh, well, one of these things is not, you know. But, we found an Airbnb that was nice-ish. Yeah, you should see it. Beautiful place.
Okay.
You'll never go in warmer water. Beautiful aesthetically. There's a reason that, like, all the Instagram ass models go there to take their photos. It's an unbelievable place. But, boy, it will leave you broke. Okay, well, with that, that was quite the diversion. We will be back after this here on Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray.
It's Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub. If you wanted to join the show, now's the time to do it, because after this, we wrap up with 5 questions for Chris Gasper. I got nothing to do with sports. So David in Hopkinton wants to talk about Kemba Walker, his gimpy knee. 2 days into the bubble practices down in Orlando, we're already hearing about Kemba Walker's gimpy knee after 4 months of a layoff. What? Go ahead, David.
Hey, guys. Love your show.
Thank you.
So I'm a guy that's awaiting total knee replacement on the left knee because I played basketball 3 times a week for 35 years. I'm also a veterinarian, so I have some perspective on degenerative joint disease. And when I heard that Kemba got a Syndesk injection, you know, I concluded 2 things. One is they are throwing the kitchen sink at his knee.
Ooh.
And probably whatever the problem is, it's not going to get better. It's just like, what's the rate at which it gets worse? And that's probably related to how much he plays. So my view is we're going to get the Kemba, you know, that we got the first part of this abbreviated season in the future.
So that's
my perspective on it.
What do you know about that? Because Chris brought up that concern even back in February before the shutdown that, you know, he gets this injection. That's a bad sign. Is it like a PRP injection? Is it something to do to like just – is it a pain reliever? What's that trying to do? Why is it so bad?
It's a replacement for joint fluid, and it's just meant to lubricate the knee. And it can help a lot of people who have – you know, it can put off – knee replacement surgery for many, many months or years, even for people that need it, but for an athlete to get that. And, you know, I don't know what the medical staff for the Celtics knows. None of us do, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just telling you what my conclusions are based on my perspective.
Okay. Thanks, David. Appreciate it. Yeah. I remember, you know, going back to February, you said that was a bad sign.
I heard Synvisc and I was really concerned.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, I'm not a doctor. Obviously, he talked about it. So I guess it's, like he said, it's the fluid there, but basically it's to, as he said, to lubricate the joint. And oftentimes my understanding of it is it's when you're having like cartilage breakdown, when you get to that bone on bone point. And it's something that Dustin Pedroia had. And I'll never forget being at Fenway Park with Dave Dombrowski during the trade deadline. I can't remember the year, but I remember what he said. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, he's like, yeah, you know, Dustin has this knee injury and really it's a degenerative thing. And we were like, what? Like, no one had ever said that before. You're like, what do you mean Pedroia has a degenerative knee thing? It's like, no, he's like fine. He's just getting these injections. And then obviously Pedroia ended up having the microfracture and that didn't go well. And now his career is over. So
yeah, they had to put soft floors in his home so he could walk comfortably.
So I think Kemba's either headed for like microfracture knee surgery or I don't know what else. Again, I'm not a doctor, but Synvisc is not, that's normally not a good sign. And, you know, he just kind of confirmed that.
Michael in Medford with a Patriots thought. You're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello, Michael.
Yeah, I find you guys interesting. And Gasper hit on a point on yesterday's segment that always was making me wonder about Belichick was in discussions with Cam Newton for longer than people think. And if that was going on behind the scenes, then that means that all this Twitter on Stidham's our guy and blah, blah, blah by the Patriots, and then all of a sudden Cam is now signed, and all of a sudden the very same players are, oh, look, Cam Newton, blah, blah, blah. A little confusing for Stidham. So if I'm Stidham, I'm wondering, Michael's wondering, if Stidham was ever sat down and talked to and made aware of this, or did he find out the hard way? That would be a break in his confidence, I would think, if he thought he was going to be the starter and everybody was rah-rahing him, and then all of a sudden Newton's on and the same team is doing the same for Cam Newton. So I was wondering, since he knew about the discussions, if he knows about how Stidham was handled by Bill.
Thanks for the call, Michael, and thanks
question.
For referring to yourself in the third person.
I don't know that. I don't know how much Stidham knew about it. I do know, though, that they still like Stidham, and I think Stidham has been made aware that they like him. But he needs – look, here's the reality of this whole situation, taking the 30,000-foot view. The Patriots, going into this offseason, way back after their season ended against the Tennessee Titans, they knew they needed, ideally, a bridge quarterback for this year. They wanted that bridge quarterback to be Tom Brady. Tom Brady left. He went to Tampa Bay. They still needed a bridge quarterback, but at that point, they didn't know if they were going to get one, so they start pumping up Stidham. Now, they get Cam Newton as a bridge quarterback, and again, as I said earlier, I think it's a win-win-win. It's a win for Cam Newton. He has an opportunity to start here and rebuild his value. It's a win for Bill Belichick because he now has a quarterback that was not – he's not going to have to experience the growing pains of a quarterback necessarily with the win now team. And I think the Patriots think it's a win for Stidham because it gives him some more time to marinate before he gets thrown out there.
Yeah. And I know that there's been some talk and, you know, maybe something happened between he and the team, or the team didn't like the fact that he, you know, got out of Dodge with his wife, went down to Texas. There was apparently a wedding and he had to go to, and maybe that was a bad sign. I don't think that was any kind of a tipping point, but I can understand, especially when you see guys like, well, the former quarterback practicing and, you know, thumbing his nose at the NFLPA doctors being like, ah, COVID, I ain't afraid of that. I'm going to practice. And Stidham gets out of here. Well, someone pointed this out to me last night. He's letting it be known. Guys, I'm back. Do I still have my job? I'm back. He was on Instagram last night, posted to his story, back home in New England, and come home to this. Thanks at Topo Chico USA. Apparently, you got a big, I'll show you it to you, Chris, like a big delivery of,
what is it?
I think it's, looks like some sort of Mexican cola, like the cane sugar soda.
Oh, nice.
That's probably not the healthiest thing for a professional athlete, but there you go. You got a nice delivery of free soda there, Jarrett, and you lost your job. Jim in Plymouth, you're next here on Gasper Murray with a Patriots thought. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Not much. I love the show, and pretty much I just, you know, long-time listener and first-time caller. Pretty much what I want to talk about is that, you know, why didn't, you know, Sony Michel is, you know, okay running back, but I don't think that he is the answer for the Patriots. And let me ask you something else. Why are we going to go after that kid in Clemson or whatever it is?
Trevor Lawrence?
Drop pick.
I would like to think so, but they're not going to be bad enough, Jim, for that to happen. You know, I think he's going to end up being the consensus number one pick, but who knows? You know, quarterbacks have taken a dip before when I actually didn't think he was all that great last season, considering all the talent around there. And then in the championship game, I thought he straight up sucked. So I think his I really do. Like he looked rattled.
No, he was not accurate, and I do think LSU rattled him a little.
So I think maybe he's taken a bit of a hit, but considering his size, you know, they actually let him loose. You know, they let him loose. The thing that shocked me about Trevor Lawrence last year is how many times he like got out of the pocket and, you know, used his mobility to make plays. All that being said, they're not going to be bad enough. They're not going to tank for Trevor. I think he'll be a nice player. He'll, you know, there's a lot of people are looking at this guy as like, you know, the white whale, the next great quarterback in the league potentially, like, or at least like a suck for luck Andrew Luck type of thing. They're not going to be bad enough for him. Patriots at running back, Chris, I don't know if there's a more overrated position on this team. Sony Michel, James White, nice player, as long as he's healthy. Rex Burkhead, I don't get it, to use your words. Damian Harris, really didn't see the field last year. Feels like a waste of a third-round draft pick.
well, that's a rosy picture you just painted.
You know, but I think that's a while snarky, honest assessment of that position. Yeah. You know, like,
jury's still out on Harris. I mean, guys like White and Shane Vereen also basically redshirted their rookie years too.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like this is a prove it year for Sony Michel. I think, is that fair? You know,
that's
like,
fair. I think that's fair. Yeah, that's
and
fair.
Rex Burkhead.
He's fine. I mean, again, I'm not saying I don't want the guy on the team, but I have to bring this up because we talked about it in the break, because people were like jamming down my throat. Oh, the AFC Championship game from 2018. So just, you know, to recap, in that game, he had 12 carries for 41 yards. Yes, he did have two touchdowns, including the game-winning touchdown. But those two touchdown runs that we're talking about, yeah, one of them was from 4 yards out, the other from 2 yards out. Like, literally, there are 12 backs during the Belichick era that you could have swapped out that could have scored those touchdowns.
Okay. Well, there you go, Chris. And I also want to stand corrected on the Topo Chico, that the big delivery that
Derek
Stidham received. It's sparkling water. It's apparently like Mexican Perrier, but honestly better. That was a tweet from John.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, so it is healthy then.
So it is healthy. Well, it looked cola-ish. There were some dark bottles there. Maybe it's flavored water. I don't know. But it's good to know Jared Stidham's back. I'm back, guys. I'm back. When do you need me to start? Oh. Oh, you signed Cam Newton, huh? Maybe I shouldn't have went to Texas. Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have. We'll wrap up the show with 5 questions for Chris Casper. Got nothing to do with sports. Next.
Stay tuned for more Casper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Casper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I got 5 questions for Chris Casper of Channel 5. I got 5 questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got 5 questions.
5! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I got 5 questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right, so we try to wrap up the show each and every week. 5 questions for Chris Casper. Got nothing to do with sports. Chris Casper at Channel 5, by the way. Question number one, Chris.
Yes.
What is something that you think actually smells better than it tastes? Maybe coffee, vanilla extract, cigar, something like that?
Smells better than it tastes. Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, I guess I would say vanilla extract because it does smell really good, but I don't like the taste of it. I also would say coffee. I love the smell of coffee, but I don't...
You're not a coffee drinker, are you?
When I was very young, in fact, there's a family joke. My grandmother used to put coffee in my bottle, and when I was a kid, I loved coffee. I loved coffee. My favorite flavor of ice cream was coffee. I think I sort of coffeed myself out when I was a child. Also, not incoincidentally, I did not sleep much as a kid.
Yeah. Pipe tobacco would be mine. Pipe tobacco, like fresh, smells delicious. You try to smoke it, not great. Question number two. These are the things that you should know how to do by the age 30. How to budget, cook a signature dish, change a tire, administer first aid, and start a fire. Now, even though you're over 30, Chris, as a member of Gen X, just like me.
I'm not Gen X.
Is there anything on that list that you can't do?
I'm sorry. Can you read the list again?
How to budget. Cook a signature dish.
I can do those two. Yep.
Change a tire.
I can do that.
Administer first aid.
No.
Start a fire.
Definitely not. The last two, no shot.
Yeah, the last two, I have no shot no way. Either.
That's in fact, I would instead of the first, if something first aid, I would be more likely to burn the body. There you go.
Right.
That solves two problems at once.
Chris, I will tell you, if you get really hurt and you're in the vicinity of me, you are effed.
Like, oh yeah, totally.
I'll just call 911. We'll figure it out from there.
Yep.
Question number three: you recently got mad that I mocked Michael Keaton as the best of the Batman.
I did, yes.
On Twitter, can you make your case as to why Michael Keaton is the best Batman?
Because the key to playing Batman in any movie is not playing Batman. Nobody cares who's under the cape and cowl, and it's all like, latex anyway. The key to playing Batman is playing an interesting and compelling Bruce Wayne, which is what he did. He played a Bruce Wayne who had some deep-seated psychological issues but was able to disguise them in public. That's why he was the best. He's the best Bruce Wayne, which makes him the best Batman.
So you don't cringe when he has that little moment there with the Joker and he goes, "You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts." Like, ugh.
When he pulls out the poker?
Such a douchey
scene. He's just trying to buy time. He's the best Batman because he was the best. It's why Christian Bale was a good Batman. I mean, when Christian Bale put on the costume, he was terrible. He always sounded like he was constipated. Everything he said was like,
"Where's Bane?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He always sounded constipated, but he was a very good Bruce Wayne. The key is playing Bruce Wayne.
What old sports are we going to be airing when the show ends? Question number four. You've traveled a lot, Chris. What tourist attractions are overrated?
Oh, that's a tough one. What tourist attractions are over? I'll say this. I think the Eiffel Tower is overrated.
Really?
Not that it's bad. I just think it's overrated. I actually enjoyed the view climbing the steps to the Arc de Triomphe more than from the Eiffel Tower.
I'll give you mine because, I mean, I'm an uncultured slob. Haven't been to Europe. Would love to go, but too cheap or scared, whatever. In America, the Alamo, not big, wildly overrated. And those people around there take it way too seriously.
I like the Alamo. I was there. Alamo, if you read the history things, it's interesting.
No basement. Get mad if you wear a hat inside. Like, it's just so, like, hardcore, like, big belt buckle Texas.
Oh,
like,
it is the capital of, like, Hardo, Texas. You're right about that.
Finally, Brooks Brothers, Chris, filing for bankruptcy this week. Yes. Are you planning to buy any on-air attire from Brooks Brothers?
No. I have to be honest. Brooks Brothers is really more of an Albert Breer thing, as I tweeted at him, my condolences. It's really made for somebody with Bert's body type, and I can see why it's popular in New England, because everything's very, like, squarish. For someone who's slender and slim like myself, Brooks Brothers never really worked. I wish them all the best. I hope they can reconsolidate and come back, but not really my cup of tea.
All right, and so concludes five questions for Chris Gasper, got nothing to do with sports, and this week's edition of Gasper and Murray. Chris, always a pleasure.
Right back at you, Jim. This was fun. Went by fast.
People can find you on Channel 5. You'll be on tomorrow night, of course.
I will, yes. Yep, SportsCenter 5 OT at 11:35.
And thanks to Brian Robb, B-Robb, Boston Sports Journal. Read his Celtics coverage there and more on Kemba Walker's Gimpy Knee at bostonsportsjournal.com. Thanks, B-Robb, for producing the show. And for you, that if you checked in. Enjoy your weekend. Talk to you Monday with Felger and Maz. I don't know what old sports are coming up next, but some old game. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.